And now, it's time for the Yacht Club Show with Killer, Rev D, Dr. Jim, and Coach.
Welcome back to the Yacht Club Show podcast.
Okay, I'm ready.
This is Killer. I'm joined in the studio by Rev D and Dr. Jim.
The usual cast of characters Killer.
We are going to be joined by Coach.
Coming back, making coming a, back. Yeah, this yeah, would be, what, is this two in a row? Was he,
No, it's been a little while for Coach. So, looking forward to that.
How you doing, Killer?
Well, it was an interesting weekend, and you guys would know a little bit about that. Celebrated a life this weekend, my wife's mother, Joanne, and wonderful woman. And I think you guys both knew her and her husband, Tom.
Great lady.
I didn't know them real well, but they were just really, really nice people. The interaction I had with them was always pleasant, and it were always felt peaceful to be around them.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. So we'll dedicate this show, if we can keep it somewhat high standards, to Joanne. So
that's pressure.
But
pressure.
Yeah. But it was interesting. Call it a rite of passage or something really hit me, and it stuck with me, and that was at the funeral home, and you guys were both there. Jim, a little earlier. Dave, you were there during the rosary and the eulogies. Typically, in the past for me, and I know you guys are a little bit older, in the past for me, there's always an aunt or an uncle or a parent, you know, and they'd be the matriarch or the patriarchs, you know, and you'd still kind of look up to them. And it really hit me. I looked around, and I'm the oldest now of the Flanagan. Carol and I are the oldest. There were no aunts and uncles. There are no parents there. And when you say the Flanagan family thanks you, that's us. That's, you know.
Yes, and my mom said that when her dad died.
Really?
She goes, oh, I'm next.
Yeah,
and that's the inevitability hits you.
The inevitability hits you, and I'm looking for the grown-ups, and it was kind of a weird feeling, but the circle of life, you know.
It is, it's a sobering thought.
It is.
It's a sobering thought.
It is.
You realize that this is temporary.
Yeah, our life on earth is temporary.
It's temporary.
The child grows up, takes care of the parent, and then the parent goes on, and the child has a child, and all of that cycle just keeps repeating itself. And
every once in a while, once one of those new phases starts, it kind of slaps you in the face a little bit.
It takes your breath away.
It took my breath away. I looked around and go, wait a minute, where are my older relatives here?
Right.
You know, so I can, you know, look up to them for comfort and advice. And it's like, wait a minute, it's me.
You know, the funny thing, Killer, is, you know, we don't handle death well in America.
Right.
Typically, you know, in other cultures, I think it's more of a fact of life. No pun intended. That it's going to happen. Here, we don't like to talk about it.
Right.
And I think people do. Everybody does think about it. We just don't talk about it.
No.
But you just have these different things that, like when Joanne passing, that you, man, the light goes on that. Things are different.
It's moving.
I'm getting older.
You just get less self-centered. It's like, you know, you spend so much time, so much of your life with your head down, dealing with your day-to-day things you have to solve, problems you have to solve, things to do, places to go, people to see kind of thing. And suddenly you lift your head up and you see things much more expansively.
Yes.
Well, I think it also has to do with your age when these things hit you. So my father died when I was 16, and I was in my early 30s when my mother died. And there was just so much else to distract
going on,
you.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's only when you look back on it that you kind of maybe can think about it a little bit. But you almost kind of, I always missed having that adult time.
Sure. With your folks?
With my folks.
Absolutely.
You were cheated out of that.
You know,
yeah.
It's because, you know, you're 33, you're still a snot-nosed kid at 33.
Right,
you are.
Right.
I know I was.
No, I know people, friends of mine will talk about they had a great time having a beer with their dad or doing something. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what they're talking about. You just didn't have that. 10.
10.
So, yeah, you just didn't have that experience.
No.
Yeah. No. So that, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what, Mike? I think one positive that comes out of this, I think you, at this point, you start to reflect on life and what's important, what your priorities are.
You do.
Right.
And you don't take things for granted.
No, exactly. You see, say, okay, I'm going to nurture those things. I'm going to not, like Jim says, have your head down and just...
it's all about me.
It's all about me and what I'm getting ahead. Yeah. You just kind of, okay... It's there's more to it than that, and I think that's one of the good things that we can do at this time is that you resolve to nurture those things to take care of what's important to you.
Yeah.
So in that regard, it was an important weekend for me. Kind of, I don't know if it's a wake up call, but some realization did set in. But I got to say, thank you to Rev D. The day of the funeral, Dave led us very professionally and admirably, and gave my family a lot of comfort to see Dave there directing traffic, basically, you know.
Well, thank you, Killer.
Really?
Thank you.
And he,
thank you.
After the funeral, we drove the mausoleum, is that what it's called?
Yes.
And Dave gave the final blessing. He had the last word. but he had a shameless plug for the Yacht Club show.
I did. I got the Yacht Club in there.
He did.
Tune us in on iTunes.
He did. No kidding. I'm not kidding, Dr.
You never miss an opportunity when you got a crowd, you know?
You got a crowd, So it was all good. Yeah, but Dave got the final word, and I think that's appropriate. I loved it.
Mike introduced me to the Kelly family, and I felt like, you know, Brad Pitt.
Celebrity, yeah. This is
Dr. Jim.
And, you know, he had the Don Johnson, look, the light cream-colored jacket. And he just looked like he just got right off a yacht.
Yeah, he just came back from France.
Celebrity Dr. Jim, for sure.
Well, you could probably put a face to the voice. You know, they've seen this all the times. So, whoa, that's Dr. Jim.
You know what? And Mike named his father after me.
If I have another son, he'll be
Dr.
James
Jim?
David.
I like the ordering.
Yeah.
Or David James. I don't know. I can be bought. Rev D, would you happen to have a bonehead?
You know, Killer, this week I got a couple of them.
Whoa.
Okay, and see what you guys think.
Okay.
Now, you saw Trump's rally, had the rally yesterday.
Yep. 150,000 people looking
into
a 20,000-seat auditorium. Yeah, that's what I heard.
Okay. You know,
if you can believe the...
Okay.
If you can believe Rush.
If you can believe the fake news. All right. But Marco Rubio was there, the senator from Florida. And there was the New York Times was there. Michael Barbaro. I don't know if you're familiar with his work or not.
No,
Dr. Jim?
Not aware.
Okay. He took the time to tweet this out. Very strange for those who covered 26 campaign to see Senator Marco Rubio smiling and chuckling in this audience. And I was just thinking, this is what...
What's the Dems do? They rally.
Well, but this
other?
Is what news... this was a reporter.
For the New York Times.
For the New York Times tweeting this out. And I just said, this is what we've become now.
Right.
Okay. It's a rally. It's in his home state. Republican president. I mean, we can argue the good and bad of Trump. But why wouldn't you smile at this thing? And, I'm thinking, you are a bonehead tweeting something like this out. Just trying to
stir things up.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with reporting.
I mean, exactly.
This is why, you know, and everybody's more or less on this saying the same thing. This is why people have no respect for the media, because they don't even do their job.
Yeah, how do you take somebody like this serious?
He's
just trying to show up Rubio.
Yeah.
Okay. What, like you said, what difference does it make?
Yeah,
and
well, yeah, they do this all the time. They belittle each other, insult each other, mock each other. That's politics.
His point is Republicans are hypocrites. Oh, my God. You know? Look at what some of the Democrats have said about each other.
Politicians are hypocrites. Wow. You're on the New York Times dime, and you're out there. This is the best you got?
Yeah. You know, is it because these guys all want to be celebrities themselves?
Yeah.
That he tweeted this, so I'm assuming there's followers for him. You want to say something that's going to get you retweets, or I don't know how that works right now. That's what he wanted to do.
Yeah. It's a big shark tank, and they're all competing for visibility in the tank.
Man, this is going to get ugly.
Oh.
Or uglier.
Yeah. This was
uglier.
Day one, and already
this is bad.
I mean, these debates this week are to be the Biden debate is. He is going to get savaged.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because everybody is gunning for him, and he just keeps speaking and giving them. You guys, how you doing for bullets? Here's some more.
Yeah.
Now Trump just shoots from the hip, and things just fall out of his mouth. I mean, the guy.
He doesn't care.
Well, whether he cares or not, he's his own worst enemy. But he's been in politics, whatever, 5 years. Here's a guy that's been in politics for 40 years. And he lost two elections because of his
gaffes.
Mouth.
Yeah.
And he hasn't learned how to use his mouth.
That's just Joe.
That's a guy who can't be trained.
No, I don't know. He can't be trained. And that could be his undoing in this one too, you know?
Yeah.
So
you got another bonehead?
I do. This one, I was going to say a little bit lighter, but it's, I guess in reality, it's not. There was plenty of slugging during a Lakewood, Colorado youth baseball game Saturday, but
wasn't on the field.
Well, luckily or unluckily, it didn't involve bats.
Oh, jeez. What was it? Youth league, you said?
It was seven-year-olds were playing.
Seven-year-olds.
Roughly.
Oh, okay. Seven-year-olds can be.
Well, that can be quite a game, though. I mean, the 7-year-olds, you know, that can get you can get some fine t-ball at. No, I guess that might be coach pitch at that point.
Coach pitch.
Okay,
yeah. I think that some of the catchers can reach second base on maybe
two or three
bounces.
That could be. Mm-hmm. But anyway, roughly a dozen parents took their frustrations with the game out on each other, culminating in an all-out brawl on the diamond while their 7-year-old children looked on. So what happened? There was a 13-year-old umpire.
13-year-old? Oh, that's
okay.
Poor.
So he evidently blew a call. And
13 years old.
13 years old, 7-year-old kids playing.
7-year-old players.
Umpire.
We were more excited about the after game.
Well,
snacks,
exactly.
Probably.
They want ice cream you know, and mm-hmm. most of them, I don't know. Well, you guys remember when you were coaching, you say, hey, Johnny, the ball's, hey, Johnny, you know, because he's playing in the dirt and everything.
Down the daisies.
Yeah. Say, come on, you know. So evidently the umpire blew a call. And the two teams of parents started yelling it and erupted. They started fighting each other.
Unbelievable.
On the field. And, you know, can you see these kids watching?
What an example.
Watching this. But yeah. I think there was a spokesman for the Lakewood police. This was a.
Police
had to come. Yeah. It's disgusting. I highly doubt that the Rockies had any scouts there during the game.
I love that quote.
Yeah.
I love that quote.
So, I think I like that one as the bonehead, you know.
But it's very frustrating to think that could probably happen.
It's been going on for
exclusive to Colorado.
I know I've seen there was two coaches I had, and it's probably 8 or 9 of these kids, and there's two coaches that I had to
Separate
because they were getting after it at a lower.
I got to ask you guys, when you played Little League, did your dads go to the games?
No.
I remember Mitch listening to Mitch Albom once said he played Little League for a large part of his childhood. He'd ride his bike to the game, ride back. His parents didn't go to the games. Now it's like the parents have such an investment in this. They should be doing other things. Let their kids play. It's a different world.
Well, I used to go to games with Ben and Jeremy. I would be just as happy to let them go pedal to the game. Sitting there for 3 hours
to watch
these things.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you know what it's become, and we've talked about this before, but you know, sports are 365 days. If you play soccer or basketball, football, whatever, it's all encompassing. But I think the parents, the helicopter parent is a real thing. And part of the thing, they think their kid is going to get a college scholarship.
Yeah.
That's in the back of everybody's mind.
Yeah.
And they start at 7. And they get very competitive about these things. And if Johnny doesn't take it serious at 7, how's he ever going to move up on things?
Guess.
You know? No, I really think that's part of it. Kids don't care.
They don't. Not 95% of them anyway. I'm looking for the day for a little league to draw perimeter around the field. And parents can't cross the line or they have to watch it from the parking lot. That's the only way we're going to get civility back to these things. Let the kids play. Let a 13-year-old umpire make a mistake for crying out loud.
Yeah, it's in the whole scheme of things, it ain't that important.
No, it ain't. Segment, we've got Yacht Club Show regular Coach back on the line here. Coach, how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing today?
Good. Good to hear from you, Coach.
Good to join the crew again.
We're expecting big things for you, man. You had, after a long hiatus, we assume you're working on all new material.
Yeah, I'm reading at a feverish pitch.
Good. So, Rob did a nice job there at the funeral, eh?
He did. He did a nice job, you know, at the ceremony at the mausoleum, and he got a quick plug in there for the Yacht Club.
He did.
Yeah.
We had a captive audience, Joe. We had to see if we could score a few more listeners.
He introduced himself as Rev D, so he got that in.
He did. Before we talk about Joanne,
I just want to tell you about myself and the Yacht Club.
And by the way, Joanne would like you to listen to the Yacht Club.
So I understand you've got a book review for us.
I do. And I know now, Mike, you've kind of, with your new format, you've kind of shortened the timeline. So I'll try and make it crisp.
Okay. So
the book I want to talk about is it's by David Brooks.
Oh, yes.
And it's called The Second Mountain. So it was a good book. I know we're short of time.
Okay. Well, thanks, Joe. That
wraps Joe. That's about what we like, mine, Joe.
That's good.
That's crisp. That's crisp enough.
Yeah, nice talking, Joe.
Hope I didn't cut in anybody's time. No, but anyways, just David Brooks. He's a conservative writer, but he writes for the New York Times, which he describes as like being the only rabbi at Mecca. But I've read a number of his books, and he's a very thoughtful writer. One was The Road to Character. That was the last book, and he's kind of evolved as become more introspective along the way. But this book is called The Second Mountain, The Quest of a Moral Life. And the genesis of it is he got divorced about 5 or 6 years ago, and he went through a real down period. His kids were off to college, and his personal relationships were, they're all about work. And he was, you know, everything he was doing was being consumed by work. And so he came out of it being a little more spiritual. And what he did is the second mountain, what it is he said, people, you know, they grow up and they want to achieve things, and whether it's through fame or fortune, and work, and then they get to the top of the mountain, and then something happens, whether it's a health problem or a divorce or a personal tragedy, and they go into the valley. And in there in the valley, you know, a lot of them just, you know, get broken and bitter, but some of them, the language he uses is they get broken open, and they get more into their, you know, spiritual side, and they realize as they're coming out of the valley that maybe that wasn't their mountain. They see their true fulfillment in helping others, things of the spiritual nature, being more involved in the community. And a lot of these people that he tells stories about are people that had, you know, big careers, and through some personal tragedy, they just change their life. And one distinction he makes is between happiness and joy. And, you know, he says happiness is like a promotion at work or a victory of some sort. And joy is something that transcends yourself. You know, it's something that's shared with other people. Hmm. And it touches your soul. And he says, you know, when that happens, you can really tell the difference. So it's really a lot of food for thought. Hmm. And he's a very thoughtful guy. And, you know, he tells things in a from a personal nature. In this particular book, he's much more candid about his own, you know, his own experiences than he was in the previous ones. So, but again, getting a little older, you know, you start to reevaluate. And then we went through, you know, the weekend, Mike, with Antrie's passing. And it, you know, so Dave, that's, you know, you spend a lot of time around people that are going through the death of a loved one. And, you know, it's just, you kind of relive your life when you start to remember someone.
Sure.
And, you know, with, you know, Aunt Teresa was a great celebration of life. But it's, you know, you start to kind of think about what's really important. So anyways, this book was kind of something that, you know, I read it. You have to go back, and a guy like me, anyways, I got to go back and reread it because there's just so much to digest. So highly recommend it.
Yeah, you sold me. It sounds like a book definitely worth picking up.
Yeah,
it really is. One question. Is it an age thing? So when people hit that second mountain, is it typically later in life or not necessarily?
Well, I would think more often than not, but there's, you know, these, again, there's one story of a woman that she goes through what would probably be the worst thing a person could go through. She comes home and her husband has killed their kids and himself. And she decides that, you know, this isn't going to destroy me. And she devotes her life to just helping others through, I don't know whether it was a shelter or what it was, but she just said, this isn't going to break me. And I guess it, and he says, you know, some people find their second mountain, like he's remarried. He says his wife she found it very early in her life, you know.
Right.
Like myself, I can relate because I went through a financial crash.
Right.
And lost everything and kind of rediscovered it, you know, my second mountain through my kids and my family.
Yep. And what a beautiful family you've got there. But yeah, so it's all about, you know, when you hit that crisis or that lull or that, is that all there is? And then determining that I'm not going to let this define me. I'm going to find that next level, right? It's kind of like that, right?
Yeah. Right. And when you get really beneath the surface and you start to experience things that give you those moments of joy, you realize what those things are, and generally it's something outside yourself, you know.
Yeah. That makes sense.
So, yeah. Anyways, that's my book. Yeah,
you sold me, and I think I think you piqued all of our interest.
Pretty heavy, Joe.
Yeah.
I think he was kind of. If I, you know, and again, I'm not. I didn't read the book, so I'm just
read the dust cover.
I just, you know, I saw it in the library, so I was pretty sure I read the dust cover. Right, that was it. It's not like necessarily you actively make the decision that you're going to change things or climb this second mountain. It's more of something happens to you. It's sort of like
right, right.
It's like you described it earlier. You go down into the valley and you get broken. It's you get broken. You don't decide that you're going to discard what was in the past. It's sort of like
right.
It sort of just awakens something in you you didn't even know was there.
Yeah. And, yeah.
The only reason why I didn't go that extreme was not all of us go through life where something gets really broken, or maybe we do.
No.
And well, we can maybe, still get you know, that second mountain, right? Like, or not? You mentioned, or do you have to go through that?
Well, you know, you mentioned, Mike, is it, or one of you guys mentions, is it something having to do with age? And, you know, maybe someone retires, you know, which is a change, and they're not feeling fulfilled, right. And they realize that they didn't, you know, work for 40 years so they could golf every day. They think that, boy, wait till I get to golf every day, or I can do this, and they find after a period of time that there's something lacking. And, right. And then that's why they go to do volunteer work or something like that. But, yeah. You know, his premise is, you know, when you do go through one of those, I guess you would describe it as a life-changing experience. You know, I think what happens is you become more, and again, I'm speaking from personal experience, more sensitized to, boy, this is what really life is all about as you experience it.
Yep.
You don't miss what you thought, what you lived your life for to get up that first mountain. You,
right.
you think there's something else, and you start to become aware of what that something else is as you continue to live.
Well, look, okay, I got a question for the table here now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you know, yeah, I do talk to a lot of people, and you know, going through the grieving process and what have you. And you know, when you crack, that's a death. Okay, you're grieving something at that point when you're down in the bottom,
in the valley,
Okay,
yeah.
All right. So, what do you think? What do you guys think separates the person who gets out of the valley and the person who doesn't get out of the valley?
I think it's hope and maybe.
I think you know what it is. I think it's grace.
Yeah, great. Yeah,
it's a blessing unearned.
Better,
you know.
You know, I
but you have to be open to grace too.
Well, I was going to say, from my experience, it's a the people who handle very general here who handle life better are people who have a faith.
Spiritual.
Oh, no question.
You know, and I'm not talking, I'm not saying Catholic or anything like that,
you're
but
right.
there is a belief in a higher power.
But I think that goes hand in hand with what Joe's saying with grace. You have to be
open to receive grace.
You have to be spiritual.
Yeah, he just said the same thing. Yeah, I think that's exactly. Yeah.
But that's where it comes to that. It's not something you in your mind that you control and you decide you're going to do this. It's something that happens to you. So in your example, when you get what happens if you go down into the valley and you don't get out of it, you just never got broken open.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So
yeah,
in other words,
you become bitter and you know.
Yeah. To your point,
you
Mike.
It's not always
a disaster that brings this, as Joe was saying. It's just something trivial, like you go through life and you do your 40 years, you get your gold watch and your pension.
Or Joanne, you know, just okay. What is it? What is this all about?
Yeah.
You start reflecting on those things,
right?
You do.
Yeah,
passing of a
yeah.
Right.
It can
a
be
loved
there
one.
Can be a lot of different different reasons.
Yep.
I mean, look at you, Dave. You worked running a company successfully for a number of years, and you retired, and then you turned to helping people get through the
lousy times,
yeah. And try to be there for people during the important events in their life.
Yeah.
And that's something. Yeah. I'm assuming that's something you take great satisfaction in doing.
Oh, I tell you, and I've said this to all of you, the service I do at American House, the communion service that I do there, that I get more out of it than the people there.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. It really has been good for me. Yeah, so luckily I found that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I think we're going to wrap it. All right.
All right, fellas. Yeah.
Excellent, Joe.
That was a real good choice, Joe.
Very thoughtful book, Joe.
I didn't write the book. I just read it. I can't take
under the pen name. You wrote it under the pen name David Brooks.
Yeah, you're just being modest.
If you would have written a book, though, Joe, it would have been just like that.
That's right.
Well, I guess we'll let Coach stick around for the sign-off here, this show. So, Rev D?
All right. With everything going on in the world today, I think it's best to sleep with one eye open.
Oh,
still.
Still.
I'm getting these restless nights.
Still. Yeah, I know, but keep it open, Killer.
Okay.
And. Illegitimae non caberundum est.
Coach?
As always, still keep that rubber side down.
See you later, Joe.
So long, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
All right, guys. Take care.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Bye.
If you wish to be part of our email distribution with links to our YouTube streams, please send an email request to yachtclubshow@gmail.com. Music provided by Detroit's own The Renfields.